Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. Hope you enjoyed the Open. Hope the last few weeks have been good for you. Maybe you've been playing some golf. I did not get to play a whole lot of golf the last couple of weeks. The Open Championship obviously kind of takes up a fair amount of time, but also just haven't really had a chance to play. I know that sounds weird. It's weird to me. I was just talking with a friend today that I've only played, I guess, six times this summer. And that for me is remarkably low. Usually I'm dozen, 15 times, you know, it's kind of part of my job, but also I just like to play golf, and this summer has just not really been possible for a number of reasons. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll be able to do that a little bit more. I'm going to be heading to French Lick Resort out in Indiana next week. So I'll play three or four times out there. On the Ross course and the Dye course. I'm going to play a Pro-Am for the Epson Tour event, which will be out there. It'll be the former, will be the last year for the tournament this year, because French Lick Resort is going to become the home for the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. They're going to take over as the host venue. So Victoria National had been the host venue. And the folks at Dormy Network, which I was a member of for last year for I guess a year and some, I don't know, something like that. And the relationship between Dormy Network and the tour soured a little bit. I'm not exactly sure all of the details. I've got bits and pieces of it, so I don't have a full understanding, but it's not good. And Victoria National and Dormy Network wanted out. They got out. And in stepped the French Lick Resort with Dye Course, which is over 8,000 yards from the tips. It's a great property. Can accommodate everything that they need in the same area of Indiana. So they're taking over for the next 5 years. So they're going to be moving on from the Epson Tour event, which has been there for a handful of years as well. So it's cool to be able to go to French Lick each year and see what's happening on the golf side. I love it there. It's one of my happy places. They've been a sponsor in the past. They aren't now. This is just, I like going to French Lick, so I'm going to be there next week. But let's talk a little bit about the Open Championship. Talk a little bit about that. I do want to talk about a couple of other things. One related to Akshay Bhatia winning the Barracuda Championship. And then I want to talk about this guy who blatantly cheated, apparently, on PGA Tour Canada. We'll talk a little bit about that, too. We have a guest today. Our guest is Robbie Berger, who is the man behind Bob Does Sports. If you are of a certain vintage, you may have no idea who Bob Does Sports is, and that is absolutely okay. You're going to learn about him a little bit at the back end of this show. If you are a little bit younger, maybe my age, I'm 40 or younger, you've probably heard of Bob Does Sports if you're into golf. A lot of my friends, kind of peer group, have asked me about Bob Does Sports, what I think of them, and I've watched their content. I really enjoy what they do. It's fun, it's lighthearted. It's a good way to kind of jump into golf, even if you're a huge golf geek or you've never heard of the sport. And so I wanted to talk to Robbie a little bit about kind of what goes into making Bob Does Sports and what he's learned along the way, not just talk about the content itself. So we had a really interesting conversation. That's the interview for this week. And you can also catch that if you just want to listen to that. And we have separate feeds for a bunch of different stuff that we do on GNN Radio. This will be on the show that we do. It's around golf entrepreneurship, which is called Green Shoots. Find that anywhere you get your podcasts. And then also we have a feed called GNN Radio Buttercuts, which is interview segments, our best interviews with various different guests that we have from around the world of golf. You can find either one's more business focused, one's kind of catch all. But you can check it out there as well if you'd be interested in subscribing just to those conversations. Let's start with the Open, though. So Brian Harman wins on 13 under total. And he was dominant the entire week. I mean, the tournament was basically over Friday early afternoon, I would say. I mean, when he finished Friday morning, I think you would argue that it was over. But once you kind of, it was clear no one was going to catch him through the first 36 holes, it was really a matter of time, right? And there were definitely some stumbling blocks, right? He bogeyed two of the first four holes on Saturday in the final group with Tommy Fleetwood, with the whole of Liverpool and Hoylake pulling for Tommy Ladd. I mean, Tron Carter of No Laying Up, who's a big Fleetwood fan, he hopped on a plane to take a transcontinental flight to go watch Fleetwood in the final round because he had a dream that Tommy Fleetwood won. I mean, that's kind of the level of people pulling for him, and for good reason. Fleetwood's a great player, but bogeys two of the first four holes on Saturday, gets him right back. I think he birdied, what, 6 and 9, something like that, on Saturday. Then on Sunday, bogeys two of the first five, hits it in the gorse on five, the par five that everyone's getting to in two, basically an automatic birdie if you keep it on the planet. He makes bogey, and it looks like things are going to start to turn. Things are going to get interesting. Here comes Rahm. And then what's he do? He birdies six, birdies seven, gets those things erased. All of a sudden, he's back in complete control, plays the back nine masterfully. And frankly, after probably the 12th or 13th hole, it was a no-doubter. And it probably was much sooner than that, but I had a ticket on him in the betting market at 110-1 to win. And I had $2,200 coming my way if he won. So I was very concerned up until he hit the green on 18 with his fourth shot. So I still had, you know, doubts in my mind, just like any gambler who's ever had that kind of ticket in their hand. But the performance was incredible. The putting is obviously really what did it. I thought an interesting statistic from Justin Ray, who does stats for, I think, 15th Club, and you see him on Twitter all the time. He used to do it for ESPN and Golf Channel. Very good follow if you're into these kinds of things. But he did the breakdown of the percentage of strokes gained putting per major winner this year. And John Rahm had the lowest percentage gained putting at the Masters, and that it increased over the course of the major. So Brooks Koepka gained more strokes, some of them on the order of maybe 25%. Wyndham Clark got closer, I think, in the mid-40s, because he had a great putting week, if you'll remember, at LACC. Well, Brian Harman's was even better, gained 11-plus strokes putting out of the 18 or so that he gained over the week, and that was the highest percentage putting-wise of the four major champions, and I think you could probably look back quite a ways, and that'd probably be the highest percentage of any major champion, maybe in the last 10 years, but it's pretty close, I would assume. We don't have strokes gained data for all of those tournaments, so you wouldn't be able to do that, but if you were going to make me guess, I'd say it's right up there in the top three, if not the top spot. And it shows you how you can win major championships at certain venues, and it doesn't always have to be the same way. Golf can be done in very different ways, even when it doesn't seem like it should be a fit. And not to get too much into gambling and statistics, but that's something I have long noticed about golf, is that every player is who they are. And you gain strokes certain ways, right? And that's not new. Every player has different strengths and weaknesses. But when they win, or when they finish really highly in a tournament, is when they excel either in their strength, or they excel temporarily in an area where they're weak. And Brian Harman is a guy who just kind of gains strokes at everything. He's a good driver of the golf ball, so a relative lack of distance isn't necessarily a huge problem. He's a good iron player because he has to hit longer clubs in than anybody. So when he's gaining strokes on the field, he's hitting his mid and longer irons well, and he's hitting the scoring clubs well too, but he's got to hit more shots from distance, makes it easier to gain strokes in that regard, statistically speaking, even though the shots are more difficult. And then he's always been a good putter, and he said a couple of weeks ago he found a training device, kind of a mirror-based training device that helped him with his path, and it felt like he was kind of pushing it, and then he kind of put a little hook stroke on it, and that turned out to be squaring it up, and he was incredible from inside 10 feet, missed one putt all week inside of 10 feet. That just doesn't happen. I know he's the number one putter on the tour from inside 6 feet, and that's unto itself also incredible, because those are the ones that keep your round going. Those are the ones that make sure you get to the weekend, that make sure you finish well, that keep a good round going. All of those, he is great at that. And this week he excelled in that. and also had a really good game plan. And frankly, he had the right profile for Royal Liverpool, because the type of golf that you had to play, a lot of it was strategic in nature. It wasn't necessarily bombing it as far as you could. There were opportunities to do that, sure. But there were a bunch of times on this course where, frankly, hitting a 310 or 320 or 350-yard drive was a big risk and not particularly advantageous. So a lot of the longer players would lay back with a metal wood or a hybrid iron or a long iron, get the ball out and play, and accept a longer shot, knowing that they might stay away from some of the internal out-of-bounds or some of the bunkering, a lot of bunkering, obviously. Brian Harman does that every week anyway. He has longer approaches in because he's 32 yards shorter off the tee than Rory McIlroy, the number one driver of the golf ball in the world. So he's hitting 2 to 3 clubs more into every green anyway. Well, he was doing that this week, and he was just doing his normal thing. And a lot of the other guys weren't necessarily getting the full advantage. I mean, they still had the advantage, but they weren't getting the full advantage of their length and their strength. And I think that leveled the playing field substantially. And of course, Harman's incredible putting was enough to put him over the top. That was really masterful, interesting to watch, it's fun to watch somebody do something somewhat unexpected. And I know that there were a lot of people, you know, on golf Twitter, stuff like that, I'm sure maybe among your peer group, your text chain, whatever, that were rooting for him to fail on Saturday and Sunday. Not because they didn't like Brian Harman, I mean, maybe in some cases, but because people just inherently want an interesting major, right? They want the capability to watch something that's close to the end, not something that's over before it starts. And so you kind of inherently root against the interest that keeps that from happening, keeps that close ending from happening. And I understand why people think that's kind of dull, but dominance is rare in golf, truly rare in the modern age. And I know it's not especially sexy because there's not a whole lot of movement and there's just someone being way better than everybody else, but that doesn't come along very often. And so for Brian Harman to have one of the more dominating performances in Open Championship modern history, that's incredible for him, for it to be his first major championship. Very happy for him. I spent very limited time with Brian Harman in my life. The 2017 players, when they did the Blog Cabin thing, was down there and spent some time with Brian and John Davenport, who was his caddy at the time. And I became huge fan of theirs, because they just went along their business. They had fun. They knew what they were trying to accomplish. And just the way they carried themselves, I really liked. I probably do not agree with Brian Harman a whole lot on political matters, but I do agree with him a lot on taking on the world, kind of knowing when to get a chip on your shoulder, being motivated by certain things, certain slights, perceived and real, and then trying to kind of figure out how to beat the system, beat the people who think you can't win or think they've got you beat. I love that, and I admire that about him. The British press seemed to be particularly at odds with him over the fact that he hunts. I don't understand the obsession with that. There was some apparently snarky comment whether Brian Harman would like drink deer blood or something out of the claret jug. Like, no. The one thing I do feel like this week did expose or destroy, depending on your point of view, is this notion that the UK fans are so much classier all the time than the American fans. That's not the case. There are boorish people everywhere in the world, and some of them have access to golf tournaments. And there were plenty of them that were saying nasty and vile things, it sounds like, to a number of players, but particularly to Brian Harman on Saturday. Harman found motivation in that. He talked about a guy who said after he made the second bogey on Saturday with Fleetwood, that a fan shouted at him that he didn't have the stones for this to win. And he said, and then the next two words out of Brian Harman's mouth were, "That helped." almost as though it snapped him in to say, oh yeah, you think you're going to stop me or you think I can't do this? Watch me. And that's how I kind of feel about life. The quick, I tell this sometimes to people who, you know, I talk about maybe the business of golf news and other things like that. The quickest way to get me to do something is to tell me I can't. And especially when I'm interested in it. Obviously, if like the quickest way to get me to go on a roller coaster would, that's not my favorite thing, right? Like you tell me I can't, I go, okay, well, that sounds pretty good. I probably don't want to do that anyway. But if you tell me it's something I want to do and you tell me I can't do it, I'm going to find a way to do it and do it the way I would like to do it. And I think Brian Harman is that kind of guy. He's an incredibly accomplished player, two-time Walker Cup member. He was the youngest at the time appointed to the Ryder Cup team in history when he made it. That's since changed. Played in, again, two Walker Cups, has been a fantastic match player, was a junior golf phenom. He had accomplished a fair amount on the PGA Tour, won twice. He had made two aces in a round at the Barclays in 2015, and won in 6 years, though, and kind of had this ebb and flow career where he goes from anywhere from top 30 in the world to 125th or so in the world and just vacillates between the two depending on the kind of season that he has, but always been a pretty decent player, you know, somewhere in the range of 60 to 70th in the world. And he's been doing that for 15 years. That's incredible. I don't care who you are. If you can accomplish a 15-year PGA Tour career with a couple of wins, you've done something. And you might not like that. That's kind of the Charles Howell III model or the Brian Harman model, who he had won $29 million in career earnings going into this week. Well, now he's got 32. And he's going to have a whole lot more after that. And I'm sure he's made a ton off the course and will make a ton more off the course because he is now a major champion. And I, again, that's not sexy, right? That people are like, oh, the people who win all the time are amazing. And they are. But it is still an incredible achievement to have the longevity that he has had and to figure it all out for 1 week at 36 or 37 years old and win a major championship to capstone your career. That's wonderful. Now he has an opportunity to be in all the majors for the next 5 years. He's going to be on the Ryder Cup team for sure. Almost certainly going to be on the President's Cup team next go-round. He's going to have an opportunity to play in this championship until he's 60. He's got major berths for the next 5 years. He basically gets to 42, 43 years of age on the PGA Tour without a single thought. He's going to be in all the designated events next year, so his earning power was already there, but it's up even more. He has a lot of opportunity in front of him because it came together for him in 1 week in a way that I assume he thought was possible, but not a whole lot of other people maybe expected. And that's the beauty of this sport, that 1 week can truly change your life, can change the arc of your life, the arc of your career. And I don't think he is personally going to change. I mean, he's been afforded a lot by the game of golf. He sounds like he's got a place in Syracuse and near a river, and he's on St. Simon's Island, and he's doing well. He's got a wife and three kids. I mean, he's about to hit the prime of his adult life, and he has seemingly found the prime of his professional golf career, kind of like the old school used to be, where you could be 32, 33, 35, 36, and really finally find your stride. And this is his moment for that. So congratulations to him on that. It's really cool. I appreciate him making me a couple of $1,000. That's very nice, too. That'll pay for some flights to go to the Solheim Cup in Spain at the end of September. And that's great stuff. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit about Akshay Bhatia and what he accomplished in the Barracuda Championship. Also, why he's not going to get fully rewarded for that. And maybe a little bit about cheating in golf. And stick around, of course, Robbie Berger from Bob Does Sports is our guest in the third segment. We'll be back right after this. All right, so let's get into Akshay Bhatia. He won the Barracuda Championship on the PGA Tour in the DP World Tour co-sanctioned event, the Oppo event, the second one in as many weeks. When they do the overseas swing, it's the event that has the modified Stableford scoring system. So you have points per hole. You want more points. You don't want negative numbers. You want positive numbers. And there's room for a lot of movement because the points are staggered in such a way that eagles dramatically move you up the leaderboard, and birdies don't quite do that. And pars keep you where you are. You lose a little bit for a bogey. You lose a lot more for a double bogey. So it's an interesting system, and it makes for a unique tournament. Obviously a great setting, Tahoe. It's one I've tweeted about. I'd love to go cover it. Not because I necessarily think it'd be the most interesting golf tournament. I mean, I think it is. But the setting, the tournament being a little bit different, being a little bit more low-key, I'm kind of at the stage now. I mean, I don't cover tons of tournaments these days because of what's going on with GNN and building that out. But I've tried to seek out opportunities to cover tournaments that I think earlier in my professional version of this career, I wouldn't have either had the opportunity to go to or wouldn't have got clearance for if I worked for somebody else or that type of thing, because it wouldn't be that compelling or wouldn't be worth it to the company or whatever. And now I can just kind of decide to do what I want. So I'd like to do the Barracuda someday. But so we get to a playoff because Akshay Bhatia makes a great putt coming down the stretch, gets it, ties for the lead. Patrick Rodgers cannot birdie the last, even though he gave himself a great look at it. He had birdied it the three prior rounds. Got it to, I'll say 12 feet, 15 feet for birdie up the hill. An awkward putt for sure, but never really gave it a good look. Gets to the playoff. Unfortunately for Patrick Rodgers, it's a great drive that winds up in a divot in the fairway. You can't hit it properly. You kind of have to hit it on the borderline of thin and flush to be able to advance the ball out of it. He hits it a little bit fat, a little chunky. He can't get up and down for par. Bhatia has an easy two-putt for the win, and he's now a PGA Tour winner, 21 years old. He had skipped high school or skipped college, went pro straight from high school. I heard from a number of people he was kind of a bit of a muppet when he turned pro, didn't really have an idea of what was going on in the world, didn't understand how to be a pro, didn't understand things about people. Not that he was a bad guy, just didn't, kind of foolish. And he's learned through the school of hard knocks how to get to this point. And won on the Korn Ferry Tour, found a way to special temporary status this season after finishing, runner-up or co-runner-up in Puerto Rico. And now finds himself with a full PGA Tour membership. And that's all awesome. However, there was some confusion about what his status is moving forward for the rest of this season. So on the telecast, Johnson Wagner was the color commentary analyst. And he said, well, you know, I'm kind of doing the math here. He's not listed on the FedEx Cup point standings, but doing the math with the non-member points that he has and the 300 points he gets for winning, that he should be basically into the playoffs with ease and maybe even in the top 50. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. You don't get retroactive credit for the points that you earned as a non-member. That's just a way for you to earn membership for the next season. If you finish in the top 125 at the end of the season, had you been a member in these points, then you get membership. Well, when you do this and you get special temporary membership, all the points that you accrue from up until the point that you're a full member, they don't count, which means he starts at nothing and has two events to potentially earn enough points to get into the top 70, because the playoffs have changed, right? It's no longer the top 125 that get in. You get into the top 70. Well, that's basically a couple of seconds or like a win and a decent finish now on the PGA Tour in 2 weeks. So that's very unlikely that he'll get into the playoffs. What is unclear to me is, can he somehow earn his way into designated events on the basis of where he finishes the regular season? I don't think that that is possible, but I wonder if that is out there. Either way, I think this is kind of a silly rule. The PGA Tour has long had rules like this that try to offer opportunities to hot hands through special temporary membership. And then if you win, hey, cool, you know, welcome aboard. But because he doesn't get full credit for the points that he's already earned, including the win, he's screwed. And I think that that's flies in the face of the idea of being able to attract players who are playing well, who may not have status, but are having a moment. And I don't think Batia is having just a moment. I think he's going to be around. But to not be able to reward that with an opportunity to play in the playoffs seems short-sighted to me. And unfortunately, that's going to be the way it is unless some kind of miracle effectively happens here in the next couple of weeks. And I don't think that's going to be the case. I wish that were not the situation. I wish he were just, okay, there you go. I actually think if you win on the PGA Tour, I think you should get into the playoffs. That's just me personally. I kind of like what NASCAR does around that, where they have their playoff system and wins count. Like, wins mean something. And then the winners basically get in. And if you have then remaining spots, it's based on points among non-winners. And I don't think you would see a big difference, a big jump in the number of players that would get into the playoffs. And you just say, okay, all of the winners get in, and you leave whatever number of spots open for them, but it's still the top 70 in points. I think that would be very reasonable. Again, it's a huge opportunity to win on the PGA Tour. I think that should be rewarded with an opportunity to compete in the playoffs. But that's just me personally. I'm sure the PGA Tour has its methods, although many of their methods I no longer understand because of everything that's been happening with the public investment fund and what the rationale for anything is doesn't make sense to me. So I'm not completely convinced about that, but at least congratulations to Akshay Bhatia figuring it out, getting to a good place. We do have another major this week. Actually, we have two. We have one on the LPGA, the Amundi Evian Championship, and the Senior Open Championship at Royal Porthcawl in Wales. Bernard Langer has won there twice at that venue. Very good reason to believe he would do well again this week, but some people like Ernie Els, some people like Steve Alker, Miguel Angel Jimenez, Rob Pampling. But I do want to touch for a couple of minutes in a little bit of an audible from the cheating golfer story. We'll cover that on Two Off the First, which we're recording not too long after this. That's my weekday podcast that talks about the biggest stories in golf. But I want to touch on the Amundi Evian Championship because it is now in its 10th playing as a major championship. Started in 1994 as the Evian Masters. On the LET, became a co-sanctioned event, I think in 2000 maybe, somewhere in that range. Helen Alfredson's won it three times. Annika's won it a couple times. It's a really, really nice tournament. And the reason it became a major in 2013 was Evian thought that they were going to get out of this contract. And so the LPGA came to them and said, look, if we made you a major, would you stay? And they said yes. So it became a major. So all of a sudden they went from having four majors to having five. And the Evian became a major. And it's been that way for, you know, now 10 years. They didn't play it in 2020, I guess. But it's been around. It's been institutionalized, so to speak. And I still think that there is a relevant discussion about whether this should be a major. I don't mean to bemoan it. It's a very nice tournament. Everything I've ever heard about it is that it's a lovely experience and done well and done right. But it's really hard to just kind of create a major out of thin air. And I think that has proven to be the knock on this tournament. And the reason I say that is because you get players like Lexi Thompson who refuse to play it. Like, she doesn't even make the trip. Now, she's also been playing terribly this year and I think missed 5 of 7 cuts. And I'm not exactly sure she is convinced that she wants to remain a professional golfer. I feel like she's lost interest in it in a weird way. But nevertheless, if you're invited to play in a major championship, or you have a major championship and you invite one of the top 10 players in the world or top 15 players in the world, and they're like, no, thank you, I don't want to come to your tournament, then how important is it? And I'll say the same thing. It's kind of weird that Steve Stricker, who has won 3 of the 4 majors played on the PGA Tour Champions this year, that he's not going to show up for this one. He doesn't make the trek. He just doesn't do it. And I understand that's kind of been his MO for a long time. But why not? I mean, you're a representative of the tour and you just don't want to be there. So how much stock can you put in that? And I think that's the thing that this championship struggles with as it goes. And it's going to be a nice week. But it is a weird time on the LPGA because the stars, you know, the established stars, I should put it that way, they're not having the best year. Nelly Korda just won one of the Saudi-backed events on the Ladies European Tour, while Lynn Grant won her first event in Ohio, first LPGA event in Ohio. Jin Young Ko's had a nice year so far, but hasn't been great really in the majors. Lydia Ko's been on like a downslide this year. It's been a weird year for her, even though she won in Saudi Arabia on the Ladies European Tour. But otherwise has been completely non-existent on the LPGA. So you've got this kind of gap. You've got this vacuum where Rose Zhang has stepped in and has been wonderful out of the gate. She just missed her first professional cut at the last tournament that Lynn Grant happened to win. And she's one of the favorites. But then you've got Hyo-Joo Kim, who's been playing very well recently. Ziyu or Janet Lin is playing very well. And they're among the favorites. It's just an interesting time to try to figure out who's going to be the next star on the LPGA, which has long been a struggle for this tour, is having a dominating player. When there is a dominant player or players, there's a lot more interest in the LPGA. When Annika was kicking everybody's ass every week, there was a lot more week-to-week interest in the LPGA. That said, the ratings for the U.S. Women's Open were fantastic. A lot of people watched because of the venue. Hopefully that'll translate to a little bit of a better audience because of Coffee Golf, even though the TV times for and the TV schedule for this tournament are truly atrocious. I think it airs on like CNBC, which is just frankly weird, and I think it's a slap in the face from Golf Channel to do that. But there's also been some discussion around, oh, it actually is on Golf Channel this year. Hey, good for them. They finally put them back on Golf Channel. Good. That's nice to see. But the challenge now, in addition to identifying the next star, seems to be in the commissioner's role. And I've had some conversations with people who are intimately involved with the LPGA in some fashion, and almost to a person have expressed concern to me about the leadership, about what's going on, about trying to pick up new sponsors and working with existing ones, and all of this stuff that seems to not be going as well as it did with Mike Wan. Molly Marcos-Salmon it doesn't seem like ingratiated herself to everybody, and I don't have the full details on that, but it seems like it's a challenge for the LPGA at the moment. Then again, they've got a new event coming to Utah next year because the Black Desert Resort really wants to kind of put a marker in the ground for Utah in professional golf, and they're going to have a PGA Tour event too. So there's that, but how many of those are coming along, and how many new events are able to come along, and what are you dealing with in losing, you know, whatever sponsors you might be on the verge of losing? And the LPGA has historically done a very good job in replacing sponsors and kind of picking itself up. But it's in this really interesting position where women's sports is having a moment. I think people are starting to realize, hey, it's okay to watch women play sports. Like, you don't have to just call it women's sports, just call it sports and enjoy watching it. And that's happening across the board. But from a corporate standpoint, it feels like the LPGA has its most attention at the biggest tournaments and is maybe a little slow in picking it up in the others, but it's starting to come along, and this is a moment to really surge it into high gear, to take those tournaments where, no offense to the Dana Open, but they have the $1.75 million kind of minimum purses and turn them into $3 million purses and create a better standard for LPGA players so that you don't have to finish in the top 60 or whatever on the money list to come out even or better over the course of a year. We don't need to do that anymore. And it's not necessarily ever going to get to the level at the same time as the PGA Tour. But there is a huge opportunity here, I feel. And I hope that the LPGA is able to take full advantage of it. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We will come back with Robbie Berger from Bob Does Sports. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's great to have you with us this week on the 19th Hole Golf Show. My guest this week is Robbie Berger. He is the guy who founded Bob Does Sports. And there's an interesting backstory to why it's still called Bob Does Sports, and Robbie talks about that in this interview that we recorded last week, and it will also air on our podcast about golf entrepreneurship and business called Green Shoots, as well as on GNN Radio Buttercuts, which you can get anywhere you listen to podcasts at golfnewsnet.com. You can check out the GNN Radio page, listen to GNN Radio live on iHeart and tune in. Subscribe there if you're interested. It's free for everybody. But I wanted to talk to him about how he came up with his business, where he's at now with it, what his goals are, what he likes and doesn't like about his job, all kinds of different things that I think people would ask of someone who has a truly unique job, and I think he does. And he was a great guest. Really enjoyed talking with him. So hopefully you will enjoy this interview with Robbie Berger from Bob Does Sports. Robbie Berger is our guest. He is the man behind Bob Does Sports. If you are an older person, you may not be aware of Bob Does Sports, but if you are my age, 40 or younger, you have probably heard of Bob Does Sports. So Robbie, thank you for coming on with us. We appreciate it. Tell everybody where you are right now.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I hope we have a couple 50 or 60 year olds in here. I'm sure not too many, but hopefully we squeezed a few. And I am in Vancouver, British Columbia, of all places.
And you're traveling on a Bob Does Sports trip. Obviously, this gig has taken you all kinds of places all over the world. What does your travel schedule look like these days between the content that you create, the events that you host, the Breezy brand, the stuff with Five Iron Golf, which we'll get into? You got to be logging a lot of miles.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's so on the go that sometimes we don't even realize till like we get home how long we have been gone. But it's all over. It's a traveling circus, man. It really is. But the guys, we have such a close-knit group and such a close crew that we have so much fun traveling together. But it's a lot. There's times we're gone 2 months at a time, and we kind of just choose where we're going to go, whoever we're going to be collabing with. And I can't complain, man. It's pretty incredible.
What's the size of the crew of the people who travel from thing to thing, and what is the size of Bob Does Sports as a business? How many people work with you day to day?
Yeah, so in total for the Bob Does Sports team, we have 5 people on our team. So we actually, compared to other channels, we travel pretty light. So it's a pretty close crew. And then we have a full team from Doing Things Media. Doing Things is who I went in with the company with on Bob Does Sports, and they've been a huge, huge help. So they have a whole sales team behind them and whatnot, and they've kind of set the foundation for us to be able to do it. Because when we started doing this, and I'm not too sure to answer your question how many people they have, but it's a pretty big crew that they have, and they're a well-oiled machine, man. They've helped us to where we can just focus on the golf and the content, and they do everything kind of behind the scenes, and they have been incredible. So Doing Things has been awesome.
Can you give a little bit of the origin story of how you came up with, all right, I'm going to do this channel, and then how you got together with Doing Things to kind of create this partnership?
Yeah, so it was right around COVID. It was about 2020. Reed Haley, the CEO of Doing Things, me and him had wanted to do something for a while, and I knew the reach that they had between all of their channels and how big that they were. But at the time, I was always locked in with a different podcast company or whatnot. So it was the first time that I was free and kind of on my own. And I had reached out to him, and we always wanted to do something together. So when we got started, we kind of just came up. Originally, it was going to be man on the street type stuff, and we would go to different events, go to different stadiums. So we came up with the Bob Does Sports. That's what we were doing originally. And it was doing good, but it didn't really hit. It wasn't really hitting the way that we wanted to. So when we first started doing golf content, we realized how much more we could get out of it. Because we could do 18 holes, do 2 different videos in those 18 holes. And yeah, the man on the street stuff with all the traveling, it wasn't necessarily sustainable to get one video out a week, a different event a week, a different stadium a week. So that's how we kind of got the ball rolling.
I guess when did you know that you had something with golf? When did that click for you? Like, hey, we not only can make more content, but people are really connecting with it.
Yeah, it's a good question. The first video we had that really, really kind of popped off and got us started, I told my best friend, Joey Coldcuts, that we were going to be taking him to Torrey Pines, and he always wanted to play Torrey Pines. And instead we took him to, without question, the worst golf course in California. And, he was all excited and he was working a full-time job at the time. So it was a brutal joke, but I knew we had to do something to mix it up and really pop the channel off. So when he got to the course, he threw a fit, and that was the video that really kind of popped it all off. And then from there, really, really had the ball rolling.
Was there a lot that you had to learn in the business of content creation, video creation, and how to get your brand out there that maybe you didn't know before you got into this?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just kind of gauging what people liked, what they were looking for, kind of the science behind all of YouTube, because it really is a science behind it. It's pretty insane. The thing for me that was the most eye-opening that I've learned more this past year than some of probably any years of my life is the business behind it and everything that goes into it. And obviously doing things is so huge for me, but between Breezy, which is our apparel line, and then Bob Just Sports as well, all the different business standpoints to it and everything that goes behind that was very eye-opening to me. And I've learned so much this year about that. And I know I still have so much more to learn, but it's exciting. And honest to God, Ryan, I love it so much that it doesn't feel like a job, and I'm open to learning more. And it's been truly, truly incredible.
I think it's kind of important to be able to embrace that business side of things. I mean, I know there are lots of people who are creative types who are like, just someone else can handle that. You just show me the receipts. And then there are kind of people who like like to learn about it. And it sounds like you're more on that part of it.
Yeah, I'm very hands-on with it. It's something that I'm so passionate about that I'm very hands-on with it. I like to know what's going on. And I'm in business with my best friends, so it's not even doing things, it's also us too. And I want them to be informed of what's going on. And we talk about it all the time because we love it. It doesn't stop. Like when we're done filming, when we're out to dinner, we're talking about the different sides of the business and different things that we have upcoming. There's a mutual passion between all of us with it. But yeah, I mean, I love it. I really do. I'm very passionate about it. So I really, really like to know what's going on. And I think it's definitely helped us for sure.
How have your business plans changed? How has your perspective on what your business could be changed with coming out with an apparel line, doing what you're doing with Five Iron Golf, creating tournaments? I mean, those things, I can't imagine you thought about doing those things when you first started, but those opportunities have come along.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, doing things have really showed me things that I never, they kind of like, even with the apparel line and all of that, a lot of it's scary when you're first starting because it's a big thing and you don't want it to go wrong. And yeah, they've really kind of opened my eyes to it, and I'm really, really thankful that they've been able to do that for me. But everything that we've talked about, we've kind of just jumped with them. I mean, we've never said no. We've always I've been in really good hands with them, and everything that we've done so far. I mean, of course, we've had hiccups here and there. I think every company does, but for the most part, they've always steered me in the right direction with it. And everything that we've done, we've gone pedal to the metal with it, to where it's been able to work. And yeah, they've showed me a whole new side of things that I didn't even think was true a year, 2 years ago.
What has ever surprised you about your audience, about the people who watch your content, who consume it? What surprises you about it? What have you learned about them? What have they learned about you, I guess, also too?
Great question. Yeah, they the biggest thing for me, the internet now, no matter what channel you go to, no matter what it is, you're going to have a lot of negativity in there because it's just the way it is, and there's nothing that you could do to avoid that. For our channel, the amount of positivity that we get and how supportive our fan base is, and of course you're going to have comments here and there, and we're so used to it now that it just kind of rolls off. But more so than any channel I've seen, it's such a supportive audience. It really is. They are so good to us. And even when we meet them, whether it be on the golf course, when we're out, just talking to them, you could tell how invested they are into it. And they really feel like they're a part of the journey, which they are. And that's exactly what we want. And we've noticed that. And again, just the comments and the feedback that we get is so overwhelmingly positive that it's really, nowadays, it's not necessarily the normal on the internet, and we see it, and it's something that we're definitely very, very grateful for, and it's wild to us.
It feels like I mean, to be able to put on events, right, and to have an apparel line, you have to feel like you've built a sense of community with your fans. How has that happened? Has that been something that's been conscious or just something that kind of happened on its own and then you had to kind of take the ball and run with it?
Yeah, you know, and I think the good thing that we have going is we're just being ourselves, and I think the fans see that. And whether they see the content off the camera, I mean, if they see the content off the golf course or on the golf course, it's the same stuff. I mean, this is it, it's really us. So for us, it helps us that we don't have to try and be anybody that they're not, that we're not. And I think they just see a group of friends who are very close that are just having so much fun, not necessarily the best golfers out there. And I think people enjoy that, and I think they hopefully see how authentic it is, because for us, we're just being us, and it's definitely helped, and I think it's really, really created that loyal fan base.
Don't want to be negative, not trying to be negative in asking this, but is there anything that you found out in doing this that's not particularly fun? That something maybe you just got to do or got to, that's kind of part of the deal, but maybe isn't as fun as the content that you create?
To be completely honest with you, I'm having so much damn fun that there's really, I mean, look, sometimes the travel could wear on you. I guess a little bit, but man, if that's the worst of my worries, we're doing okay. And you know, sometimes with the business side of it, you know, you're in business with your best friends, so you definitely have hiccups there for sure. Sometimes that could be hard. And you know, for me, sometimes you have to have conversations that you ne necessarily don't want to have with your best friends or are tough. But every one of us hold each other accountable, and I think we do a really, really good job of it. And then we keep it moving. So, thankfully, it's such a close group, and not to be cliche, but it really is a family. Like we're really, really close, so we're able to have tough conversations that, again, you don't necessarily want to have or are tough to have with your best friends, but we do such a good job with it, and the guys are so great that they make it easier to have those conversations maybe than somebody else that might have to do something like that. So yeah, that's definitely been the part of it, is being in business with your best friends. It's very rewarding, but at the same time too, you definitely have your challenges.
Other than your personalities, what do you guys bring to the content that you guys create? What are the interesting skill sets that each of you have that are maybe complementary to each other?
The thing that's amazing is if you look at the channel, you truly, there's not a single guy that you could take out. Like each piece to the puzzle is so crucial. Like you have Fat Perez, who's this wild guy who's an unbelievable golfer, which we need a good golf because me and Joe are terrible. And then you know you have Joe who can blow up on the course and people love him. He's fascinating. And then I guess I kind of just keep the spirits high and keep them all together. But yeah, that's the crazy thing about the channel. And then you have the Jet, our editor, who's crucial in the channel as well. Each piece is needed. You can't take out one single person or one single piece to the puzzle. And we definitely realize it. So it's something that I know we need to keep this crew together for as long as we're doing. And I couldn't imagine doing this without any of the guys that we have. And I think that plays huge for us just in our content and everything we have going, because everybody knows how important their role is.
Kind of have never been in that position of being someone that people are aware of culturally and the level that you are, or Bob Does Sports is. Do you have like a time frame for how long you want to do this? Is there okay, 5 years from now, I'd be cool with stopping, or have you ever even thought about that?
I want to go as long as people will keep watching me, and I mean it. I don't, I mean, look, anything can happen down the road. Right now, Ryan, I don't see a day where I ever want to stop doing this. I mean, I truly, I am having so much fun with it. And I think our mindset, which is really, really good, and I like a lot. If you ask any of the guys, we truly feel like it could just all be taken away from us tomorrow, which it could. And we really have that mentality to where we soak in all of these moments. And yeah, we want to do this for as long as people are willing to watch us and click view on the video.
What's kind of you have bucket list content. You have bucket list places you want to go film and create content, places you want to play, things you want to experience. And what does that look like?
Yeah, you know what? For me, I've always wanted to go to Hawaii. So I think Hawaii would be awesome. We have a Euro trip coming up with Rick Shields, which should be awesome. So for me, I haven't really traveled too much out of the country, so I know I'll be a fish out of water, but to take this crew out to go to that Euro trip that we're going to be doing, we're going to be going to Scotland, and Rick will be such a great host. That's probably my bucket list that we're going to get to cross off soon. So that'll be incredible. And then we're rolling out. We always do golf content, but for us to kind of shake it up, everybody's wanted to see, content outside and off of the golf course. So the content of us going to Europe and soaking in, so not just doing your bucket list, but being able to document it, that's going to be pretty insane.
Mentioned Rick Shields, obviously another big channel in the golf world space. What's been your favorite collaboration so far? And is there anyone that you haven't hooked up with content-wise that you'd like to connect with?
Yeah, somebody that we haven't filmed with that I would love to. I'm a huge Charles Barkley fan, so I don't know how much Charles is into the YouTube golf scene, but that for me would be incredible. We love having guys on the channel that kind of go at us, that chirp us a little bit, and we give it back, and that's all like fun competitiveness. But I think the best, or probably my favorite collab we've ever done was we did with Max Homa. From PGA Tour, and there was a moment there, like when me and Joe looked at each other. Me and Joe started the show together, where we were on the tee box with Max, and I remember before we teed off, me and Joe looked at each other, and like we both couldn't believe that this was happening and that this was going on right now. So that's probably one of the best ones that we've ever done. Or we did one with Barstool and Foreplay Pod. And I've always wanted to work for Barstool, and that was always a thing for me. And I ended up, doing it on my own. So that was really cool when we were playing against them. And that was one that I wanted to win, that we all wanted to win really bad. But yeah, the most surreal moment was with Max. And I vividly remember looking at Joe and having that moment with Joe. That was really cool, and the video ended up being great.
How about from a consumer standpoint? I mean, you create a ton of content, but are you a consumer of your own kind of industry, so to speak, your niche of the world? And what are some of your favorite pieces of content or creators that you enjoy checking out when you have the chance?
Yeah, I watch every bit of content. I really do. I like seeing what other channels are doing, and I definitely watch Good Good. I think Good Good's awesome. They're so creative on the different videos that they kind of roll out and come out with. And then there's these guys from Barstool called Spitting Chicklets,
Yeah.
that I just find them. They chirp each other. They're hockey guys, so they got that hockey slang, which I find just hysterical, and they really go at each other. So that's another one that I just love. But yeah, we watch everything that comes out. Even on these trips, when we're in the living room all just hanging out after a round, we're watching everything.
What's one thing that you haven't done or haven't tried to tackle yet that you'd like to tackle content-wise?
I would say what we're doing now is something that, and it took us a while to do it and finally get the ball rolling. We just started doing it on this trip, was having an extra. I'm a guy where I want a camera rolling all the time, because everything that happens with this crew, and especially even more so off the golf course, people always say to each other, your friend group, you always say, man, if there's only a camera rolling on us. And me, it was like, all right, well, let's get a camera rolling on us. So that's the big thing, is the behind the scenes content is something I've always wanted to do, because I think it could kind of separate us from just being a golf channel. And
Sure, yeah.
I think there's a lot we have to offer with that, of us going out to dinner and all the behind the scenes. So that's something that we started rolling out that I've always wanted to do, and I'm watching that come together, and I'm very, very excited for that, because I just think it'll add a whole new wrinkle to our channel and definitely change the game up, I hope, a little bit.
Well, Robbie, thank you for hopping on with us. I really appreciate it. Dropping in from Vancouver. Hope you enjoy Whistler. It sounds like where you're heading next. And hopefully we'll catch up with you down the line. You'll be even bigger and better than where you already are.
Brian, thanks so much, man. I appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Robbie, or as he went in the Zoom meeting, Rob, thank you for coming on the show. It was great to talk to him. Hopefully, if you are not a Bob Does Sports follower, you'll give him a look.
If you are, hopefully you enjoyed that and got to know a little bit more about perhaps one of your favorite content creators in the golf space. It was really cool to talk to somebody like that. As I have kind of alluded to over the years, I realized fairly early on that I didn't necessarily want to get into that kind of public-facing role and just kind of create content forever. I wanted to kind of create something a little bit bigger. But I have a tremendous amount of admiration for someone who's able to take this concept from a seedling and quickly develop it into a seven-figure business with all kinds of partnerships, a merch line, tournaments, corporate relationships, like Robbie has with Bob Does Sports. It's really cool. It's a tremendous achievement. And seem like nice guys just making good content, being themselves. So I will always sign up and root for that. That's going to do it for us this week on the 19th Hole Golf Show. Thanks so much for your time and your support of the show. Catch us on a podcast platform, let you do so. Please leave us a 5-star review, leave a comment, subscribe to the show. Helps us reach more people. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm on Twitter, Threads, and Instagram at the handle Ryan Ballingy. You can also email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Available there. As I mentioned, you can catch all of our stuff here on GNN Radio, available through iHeart and TuneIn and various other platforms of your choice. Just search for GNN Radio. You'll find us in all of those apps. All right, we'll be back next week with another episode. Probably talk a little bit of French Lick while we're out there. Maybe talk to a couple players from the Epson Tour. Try to put together a little bit of a different show than we typically do. Or maybe we'll just stack some interviews and play them throughout August. That I don't really know exactly, but there will be some French Lick and Epson Tour related content next week. And I'm very excited about that. Thank you so much for your time and your support. We will catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.